Now, this was the last week in January, and I thought, is it a little bit early for a peacock to be displaying?
Peacocks, yes, I know. The males have an enormous tail, and they wave it around, and they have you turn them around and look at the back of them. I mean, their white bits are going up and down. I mean, they're really giving it welly. It was a great cartoon I saw with two peahens who are dull creatures by comparison to the peacocks, and they're looking at this fella going through his paces, and one says to the other in peahen language, "Yeah, right, but show us his welly."
Luckily, there's no water shed on radio, and it is after 10.
And they don't have one, Aina. They have cloacas instead.
Well, yes, indeed.
Well, you should explain that now.
So without getting too graphic about it, there are very few birds that have, or male birds at least, that have penises, as we would recognise them. Male and female of most species have what's called a cloaca, which is a single opening for all sorts of purposes, including reproduction and defecation and so on. And that is what they use.
And laying eggs, all the
laying all of that. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. So the reproduction, defecation, all of those things. And that's really what it's all about. So there's very few birds that have a penis, as we would. Some ducks do, for example, and a couple of warblers as well, but not very many others.
So whoever the artist
there's
was.
There's a reason
for that.
If you copulate on the water, you have to have a penis, because it's all right on land, your sperm will go where you want it to go. But if you are on water, and for instance, my good friends, the swans, copulate on water. Well, now, if the sperm is likely to be washed away, unless you can insert this into the cloaca and make sure that it's discharged into the receptacle and not wasted on the water.
So the peahen should be going out with swans instead of going out with male peacocks, by the sound of that.
Well, from the look of Derek's video there, they don't seem to be interested in him in any way, so I don't think he's getting anywhere.
No traction there. But I mean, it is displays and all of that are stimulated by the pineal gland producing the hormones that, and it's stimulated by the light. And if that isn't spring, what is?
Well, the thing that you mentioned there, Niall, is the fact that the peahens completely ignore this guy. And you can hear him screaming and shouting. Or who's doing the screaming and shouting? I presume it's him, is it?
Him, yeah.
Yeah. Do they do anything at all? Do they make any noise at all? Or do they just say, yeah, I'm interested? And if they are... Now, I did notice him shimmering as he was showing his beautiful feathers and his wonderful colours. He was shimmering a lot. But they had absolutely zero interest.
We know from studies that have been done into peacocks and strutting their stuff, quite literally, that the females are impressed by symmetry in those feathers. And we call them the tail feathers, but actually not the tail of the bird. The tail of a peacock is quite short. They're the covert feathers that cover the tail, and they can raise them up like that. And anyone who's seen peacock feathers will know they have these eye-like structures on them. And the female seems to be, or the females, plural, are impressed by the males with the best symmetry and also the most eyes in the tail feathers, or tail covert feathers, and the sort of shimmy dance that the male can do. And I think what's happening here, spring has sprung, but it's still early days. And I think this male is just getting into his stride, and the females aren't quite ready yet. They're not receptive. So they're not even really thinking of that. They're thinking, oh, he's gone off early, hasn't he? And what really gets them into a frenzy if there's more than one male. If the males start competing with each other, they spend hours every day doing this, and that's what gets the females' attention.
Yeah, you get a great look at them if you go to the zoo. Dublin Zoo has great collections of these.
It's the most noble of birds, the most honest of all birds, the peacock. Why do I say that? Because displays are usually false. In our case, for instance, the guy going around with the big car and the fancy suit and all decked out, females are meant to think he's a good catch, I'll engage with him. But in fact, he may have borrowed the money for that. He may be greatly in debt. He may be a total charlatan. So the problem with displays is to determine whether they are honest or not. And the peacock is the supreme one for honesty, because in order to create those lovely little discs in the big display, you can only be honest. You have to have the resources to create them. That is a great way of showing that I am as strong and as capable as I maintain, because otherwise I couldn't have produced all these lovely circles.
Well, are not all male birds then equally honest in the sense that they have to have the colours in their feathers? I mean, are there some birds that put on pretend displays and promise more than they can deliver, let's put it like that?
That may be true, but this is a refinement. It's not just painting your wing yellow or something, or putting on a nice crown. This is a real task. How do you develop these gorgeous circles in the covered feathers? How do you manage to that? You've got displays which are called revealing displays and ones which are called handicap displays. Now, the honest display is the revealing one. If a man shows a girl his biceps, look, here I am. I'm a fine specimen. Now, that's a revealing display. You're displaying what you have, and you're not depleting what you have in displaying it. But in the other, the handicap display, you are showing off something that you are claiming, but it's costing you a fortune to put it in there. It's a handicap to do so. So the handicap display has its downside. And in the case of the peacock, he can't do any rearing of young or anything like that. It's cost him so much to produce the gorgeous tail that he's not able for anything else.
And presumably it also shortens his life because it is a serious handicap. Where these peafowl live, so it's like Indian subcontinent. I've seen them in Sri Lanka myself, strutting their stuff in the fields. Mm. There are lots of predators around. So they're dealing with things like leopards and tigers and jackals and all sorts of creatures that want to eat them, humans as well in some cases. And having a big hefty tail like that, or those drooping feathers over the tail, that's a real handicap when that bird is trying to escape, when it's trying to fly up into the trees. The females are much more agile, much easier for them to escape. The thing though is, it still pays off for the male. He's going for, in terms of life, he's going for quality rather than quantity in terms of the years, because they're not monogamous birds. He's fighting with the other males for the right to mate with multiple females. They have like a harem type system. So the very successful male, he's going to mate with lots of females, have lots and lots of offspring. And if the trade-off for that is that his life is short, well, he's still been a huge success. His main aim in life, whether he's aware of it or not, is to pass his genes on to the next generation, and the prettiest males will do that.
A crowded hour of glorious life is worth an age without a name.
I know the feeling, ain't it? Yeah, anyway, but what about birds here, Niall? You said this bird doesn't belong here. You find them here in artificial settings and private collections. But what about our own common, our garden birds?
Well, they also display. The vast majority of birds, and indeed many other creatures, do that. We're starting to hear those displays now rather than see them so much, because birds tend to be either or when it comes to display. They either do it with flashy plumage, like the peacock does, or they do it with their voices. Very often, the drabbest birds tend to have the loudest or brightest or most interesting voices. The nightingale would be a classic example of that.
The wren
is a very good example in Irish context, absolutely. Very loud, very unobtrusive little bird. And so what we're hearing now is the beginnings of the dawn chorus. I've started in the last few days to hear the blackbirds, the robins, the wrens, the song thrushes, the missile thrushes starting to sing.
All of those birds.
And we're hearing that teacher of the great tit. And the thing is that they're just really starting now. They're not really in full gear yet. The full dawn chorus hasn't started yet. That'll ramp up until early May, that's when it peaks, and that's when we do our dawn chorus program every year. But that is their display. They are trying to, again, impress the females. They're trying to hold a territory, trying to show how powerful they are, how much time they can invest in singing, as opposed to the peacock trying how much time he can invest in dancing, essentially, and showing off his tail feathers. So it's the same sort of thing.
And then it becomes a kind of conversation. You send out your signal, anybody out there like me, so on and so forth, and then you might get a reply. So now it becomes a discourse. You're developing now into talking to the prospective partner. So it doesn't just stay with shouting and shutting up. It progresses onwards and eventually becomes courtship ritual.
Oh yeah, but you're shouting to keep away the other fella to make sure that
there is that,
you know,
course.
And he shouts back and then you've listen to him and think he's worse than me, or he's not as good as me. I could outwit him without having to come to blows about it. So like, it's war cries, it's territory grabbing, really.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting here, be it the blackbird in your garden singing its song or the peacock strutting his stuff, all of these displays, or in the vast majority of birds, it's the male that does the displaying, be that singing or showing off the feathers. There are some species where the female does it, but the vast majority, it's the males, especially here in Europe. And what that is that evolution there has driven sexual selection by females. So it's actually the females driving that whole evolutionary process. It's their preferences that are making the males the way
they are. You think this is only in the world of birds that it happens, Niall?
No, I'm just talking about birds at the moment. It happens all over the place.
The other great example, you mentioned Ireland, and whether we haven't peacocks in Ireland, but we have an animal in Ireland that does more or less what the peacock does, and that is the red deer. The red deer grows these enormous antlers. Now, they are not really useful. They do fight and they do lock antlers, but huge big 12-point antlers or whatever they are, 14, 16-point antlers. These are a nuisance if you're trying to fight. So they are about display, and you shed them every year. And our great extinction, the great Irish deer, it did the same thing, and it went to the wall as a result, because it had to grow these new big antlers like the peacock grows its feathers every year. And of course, the resources weren't there to sustain it when the climate changed, and it couldn't get between the trees when they became too dead, so they think. But the big deer is gone. The biggest deer in Europe, and probably in the world, is gone. And it's all about display and taking display too far. I would have thought in evolutionary terms, the antlers would start to get smaller until the deer was viable. But that didn't happen for some reason. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that, again, the reason that may have happened in deer is that very often it's that sort of harem situation as well, where one successful male will mate with many females. So from an evolutionary point of view, his lifespan doesn't really matter. If he's producing lots of offspring, those genes for big antlers are being passed on to his sons. This is what the females find attractive. And therefore, even if it's a detriment to his life, which it must be, and uses lots of resources, he's still being extremely successful from an evolutionary point of view. And that's, as you said, with the giant Irish elk, that can get out of hand. When something changes all of a sudden in the environment, they can no longer survive. And you can see how that could happen, for example, with our friend the peacock there. If its habitat changes because of climate change, and let's say there are fewer trees in those grassy areas where it can sleep at night or treat to, having a huge tail is going to be a big detriment to it, and that could lead to the extinction of the species potentially, you know, over a long period of time.
Another sign of spring, well, actually it comes a little bit earlier than spring, is seeing snowdrops, Aina.
Yes, snowdrops are really the flower that we all love. And indeed, they do come up in January because temperature has a bit to do with that as well. But so you see them in south-facing gardens where maybe it's a bit warmer and sort of sheltered areas. And there are different types of snowdrops. So some are earlier than others. I mean, where I live in Terrydure, and we both have the same north-facing cold gardens, but my neighbour's snowdrops are always up before mine because she's a different species or a different type of snowdrops to mine. Mine last longer. Of course, they're there till April and hers are gone, but she gets hers first. But people love to see them because they're white, they come up and, you know, they're actually growing through the snow in places like this. And it really gives people heart. And in fact, snowdrops are good things to have because they actually have pollen, they actually have nectar, which is more than you can say for the old daffodils, which are a waste of space in gardens as far as the bees are concerned, because they are no help at all to the bees. But the snowdrops and the crocuses and the grape hyacinths, they're all good. You should have lots of those in your garden.